WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, as you can see out on the Zoomer. It is football season around here. We're up in arms about all things Lamar and injuries and the Bengals. And, of course, the Orioles are doing what they're doing at 40 games over 500. This guy is a mentor to me. I think that embarrasses him, makes him feel a little old. But he is professorial at this point, and parental and grandparental and all of that stuff at this point. And in semi-retirement as a former columnist, even though I am columnist, he was my dude back from the days of Joe Don Looney and takeouts in Sports 2 at the Baltimore Sun in the late 1980s. I'm celebrating 25 years of doing this here at WNST. None of this would be possible, writing these amazing letters to Steve Bisciotti and John Harbaugh and everybody else, without the mentorship of the great John Eisenberg. He joins us now to talk about his book. I did not have a copy of your book. I didn't drive down to Towson and grab it from you and come by the house the way I usually do. Hold that up, John. Tell me what you're doing, man.
The name of the book is Rocket Man. There's your jersey on the cover right there. Warren Moon, Patrick Mahomes at the bottom. The book is the history of black quarterbacks in the NFL, going back a century to Fritz Pollard and going forward. Nice big fat book with a lot of meat in it. And
It got new pictures. It got new pictures in there, John.
No, I ain't got no pictures. Nope, just words.
It hurt me with sales on Purple Rain 2 to not have pictures. When I was out hawking them. But so the book is out right now. I mean, we've been talking about this for so long. I swear to God, John, I went to my library to look for it because I thought, is it last year? Because I know I've had I have you on 3 to 6 times a year, give or take. Used to work at the Ravens. I've been doing this 32 years now. Kenny Albert just sent me his book. I got Mike Lombardi this week talking books. But for you, you write these all the time, and you're always like, whether it's the Ripken Streak book or the Horse book, or I don't ever know where you are, the Dallas football book. I mean, you've done a whole bunch of things, man.
Yeah, yes, yes. Well, thank you for looking. And, we're going to take care of that and get you a copy. And, you helped me with this book, getting a hold of people, Lee Steinberg.
Did I help you?
Yeah, you definitely did.
And thank you. I didn't even realize I helped. You're welcome. Yes. I would do anything for you.
Yeah,
you
know so this book is just out. I've just gotten copies in my hand. And it is.
I've seen the cover, though. I knew Warren Moon. You showed me the cover last year. Was it available, the cover?
No, I think the cover, I saw the prototype, which I have no control over, by the way. I think it was April or May, so it must have been around.
You shared it on your Facebook or something, because I had seen that Warren Moon was on the cover, and that's why I knew it, to go to my closet and get my Moon jersey. So
yeah,
but you've been working on this, what, 3 years?
3 years.
Okay.
3 years. And so, deep dive, a lot of work, and, a lot of eras to cover. Most of my books have covered a short span of time, 1 year in the life of Vince Lombardi as the early, or 3 years with the Dallas Cowboys, or whatever it may be. This is 100. This is from Fritz Pollard to Jalen Hurts. So a lot of ground to cover. It was a lot of work.
John Eisenberg is an author, lives locally, and his work from the Baltimore Sun, and he's got a new book out on black quarterbacks. We're going to go through the history of all of that. You said a lot of different eras. I said my books had errors, not eras. So you have eras and typos and whatnot. For you in doing this, and when you and I, this is my stock stupid question every author that's ever been on I ask, but where's the seed on this one? Was Lamar involved in this one in some way? I mean, you were around with Shaq Harris in the beginning, and with Eric DaCosta was a kid, and I'll be giving him his letter this week as well. But, the black quarterback story, it feels like going back to Randall Cunningham and this era and Michael Vick and all of these things, it's been taken on, right? I mean, this isn't a new thing, right?
Definitely. I took it on. I signed the deal 3 years ago. Like you said, Lamar was in his, I think, third season, and that definitely had something to do with it. But you really want to ask me the seed. Listen, you're writing columns, in a major newspaper for many years. And I wrote about race, plenty of times. And in the days before, somebody just tacked a little answer to your column on the bottom of it electronically. You used to get letters. And let me tell you, some of them were ugly. That's all I can say. If I wrote about black athletes, and you remember Debbie Thomas, the figure skater at the Olympics in 1988, black figure skater. I got some of the ugliest letters, just writing nice little columns about her. That will open your eyes to the fact that this is something that needs to be addressed and readdressed and constantly addressed. And so, yeah, I mean, I've always, it's been a thread through all my books. There's a thread of race and, you know, how did it play out? You talk to those old ball players for go back 50, 60 years, especially the black ones. And yeah, you know, a lot of times it's surprising how they viewed things a little differently than other people thought sometimes. So
I've always what a teammate was at that point, right? What a teammate would look like. Yeah. In a violent sport on the field, in a gladiator sport in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when jobs are at stake, right? I mean, all of that. Cuts are being made, and it's, hey, why did I get cut? Why didn't I get cut? You know, you're keeping the black guy, you're keeping the white guy. I mean, all of that played into football, right? I mean, literally, and the decisions were all made by white guys, right? Literally, every one of them.
Yeah, yeah, and still mostly are. But the, you know, they, yes, that's exactly right. You talk to those guys from back then, it opens your eyes. And so, yeah, I had this in the back of my mind. Lamar comes in, and, you know, at the combine, that story where the Chargers said, you're going to run the 40, be a good wide receiver. And, you know, Bill Polian said, I'm not sure about him at quarterback. And in his second year, he's an MVP. And so that really sort of put it front and center in my mind. And I thought, I'm always looking for topics that go beyond the boundaries of the playing field for my books. And I thought, well, here's a big one sitting right in front of you. Why don't you take it on? So that's where it came.
All right. So you dive into this, and obviously, look, man, we didn't have black running backs or black centers or black cornerbacks or black linebackers or black kick. Black quarterback was... you know, I was working with you when Doug Williams was winning, right? I mean, and Grambling, and even, you know, knowing Shaq Harris and the beginning of Baltimore here, being here, Warren Moon was my guy, right? So I'm wearing the one jersey. I've had Warren on many times. They threw him to Canada, right? And all he did was go to the Hall of Fame in both places, right? Like, that's what he had to do. And it is amazing he's above the fold for you as the Hall of Fame guy. Because whatever his path was, and I haven't sat and talked to him at length. I've had him on the show a couple of times, and he's been wonderful to me, and he knows I'm a fan, and I goof with him a little bit about my fandom in regard to him. But you got turned on to him. You spent some time with what? I mean, I know where he's from. I went to – the last time I was credentialed at the Super Bowl was a year and a half ago, and I participated in a Wounded Warrior football game. On the high school that he went to high school at. In Los Angeles, because the Super Bowl was in Los Angeles last year. And it was a game where, like, Kurt Warner's throwing passes, and there were some special needs kids, and it was a beautiful thing. Snoop Dogg's people were involved. Big celebrity thing. It was wonderful. But it was at his field. And I had him on the show that day, and I said, I'm going to your field to do this football thing. What am I going to find over in Los Angeles, in that part of Los Angeles? Woo. I mean, it was a neighborhood you couldn't even – this day you can't get an Uber in that neighborhood because nobody will come and get you. You know, literally. So I saw where Warren Moon was from, but that trajectory out of Washington that had to take him to Canada, I mean, unfair doesn't begin to say, like, what happened at the beginning of his career and how it ended at the end, right?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, you know, undrafted after you win the Rose Bowl. He wins the Rose Bowl as a senior. Undrafted. And the story with Warren is you go back to the late, it was 1978, his year. You go back to the 60s, the 70s, even the 80s. If there was any question about a black quarterback, any regard to their skills, that set their draft stock. And for him, it was, well, he played a little more option offense, so kind of an old college offense, more than just a straight drop back, which is all the NFL wanted. Or if you weren't, that was his. With some, it would be, well, he's not that fast, or he hadn't completed that many passes. That was a big one back in that era of college football. They would just disregard you. He didn't even get drafted. So
won the Rose Bowl.
And won the Rose Bowl.
Right.
And so it's absurd, really. And he, Warren was a great friend of this book. I interviewed him at length. And he's just very, and he is really the keeper of the flame to this day. If something happens, and there's still things that happen that sort of raise the echoes or everything, he's the first guy. And if somebody put a microphone in front of him, he'll say, aha, he goes, that, you know, that's a vestige of the way, what I dealt with. And you think it's gone, and it mostly is gone, but let's not get carried away, because it's still out there.
I want people to go get your book. I'm going to have you hold it up. Get everybody at John Eisenberg's got a new book, Black Quarterbacks, the History of Black Quarterbacks. Rocket Men is the name of the book. You got to talk when you hold that up. So yeah. So for you with Lamar, let's bring it to Lamar, and not about how he played in the first week or whatever, because like that's not really the story here. The story is the contract and the offseason and Deshaun Watson, or not how he played in week one, or even Joe Burrow, or the money that's being thrown around now for all the quarterbacks. But the fact that Lamar made it to the end of the draft, that nobody wanted him the first time around in 2018 when he came out. The Ravens jump up, get him in that last pick, so they get the extra year. Then they sort of get penalized on the extra year anyway because he didn't want to play, because like that extra year is like, you're screwing me out of money by the time he proves that he's the guy, right? So he waits in line to get the money. The Ravens don't get it done. They go fight all last offseason. And I'm astonished in the modern vernacular that the Indianapolis Colts didn't want to give up that kid or the Ravens and say, we'll overpay Lamar. We'll give him the $52 million. We'll give you our first round pick, or if they really believed in Lamar. Lamar hit the market. Wasn't a real market, but it was a market that if somebody wanted to jump in and say, I want Lamar Jackson to be my quarterback, in the way that everybody wanted that criminal last year, right? Like everybody was in Carolina, Atlanta cost him a relationship with Matt Ryan. New Orleans was in, like all of those teams came in. Cleveland obviously bit off the big banana and pissed off Bisciotti. And it wound up costing all of them more money. But Lamar available? I did not see a huge groundswell of people ready to throw $250 million at Lamar. And of course, he wasn't healthy the last two Januaries. I mean, there were all these excuses to be built in that people didn't believe in Lamar. So I think your book's as relevant as anything, because like, I think around here, I scratch my head, and I don't think it's because he's a black quarterback. I guess you never know. But the fact that he didn't have value, that there wasn't a bidding war, and that the Ravens phone didn't ring off the hook, and nobody sent their jet to get him and bring him in, that kind of shocked me, John.
Yeah, I mean, he's won one playoff game. I'm trying to think up the reasons why.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's won one playoff game. He occasionally is inaccurate as a passer, and I don't think it's a very slippery slope. You get into some terrain that's a little uncomfortable, you know, about you know being a black quarterback. I don't know whether that played. It probably did not. The good thing about what's happening is you can clearly see that teams less and less are seeing color at that position, or at very least they're willing to invest in black quarterbacks. These kids that, you know, three of the first four picks last year, black quarterbacks, right, in the draft, and they all started this week. So good, you know, that's good. So
every franchise has had a couple of black quarterbacks now, like through the course of time. It wasn't like the Red Sox back in the 60s, right? Like, right. I mean, I think about teams doing bidding. Carolina had Cam Newton. Atlanta had Michael Vick. I mean, go through every franchise everywhere. That wasn't the case when you and I were working together. It wasn't the case when the Ravens got to town at all.
At all. And the Ravens come off looking pretty good in this book. I talked to Ozzie. And the difference being, of course, in Baltimore, unlike these other places, from the beginning, the guy with the power, the guy with the jobs and making the picks and shaping the roster was black. And so, you know, the first general manager in NFL history. And from the get-go, there's been a thread of they drafted Wally Richardson. I mean, you know, they drafted, you go way back to the beginning. They drafted black quarterbacks. They bring them in as backups. They bring them in as starters.
They would have taken a green or a purple quarterback by the time Billick got the bowler, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking.
Well, that year, I mean, they didn't want bowler, you know, first and foremost. You know, I mean, they were looking for black quarterbacks even then. But, yeah, anybody, for sure. And
well, of course, Brian had worked with Randall Cunningham and Warren Moon. Like, you know, so there's a whole pedigree of all that here. But to your point, you wrote a book about this. That's not the true story of the league, and that's not the true story of the executives who would look and find Al Campanis kind of lines for athletes. And Warren Moon, as I sit here and wear the jersey, and Randall Cunningham and Michael – I mean this is a modern issue. This isn't an old-fashioned
issue. It's modern.
Issue.
Okay, here's a little game we'll play. Every team in this league has started a black quarterback in a game. Okay, every team, all 32 of them. When do you think that total 32 was completed? When could the NFL say that? Every team has started a black quarterback in a game.
Well, a couple of franchises came late, so I'm making the excuses here. I'm just throwing that out. But Leftwich played in Jacksonville. 2010.
Nope. 2017, 6 years ago, it was the New York Giants were the last team in business since 1925. Okay, had never started a black quarterback in a game.
Hold on. I need a little air on. We're on radio here. Give a little dramatic. Say that again.
Yeah.
2017.
And so, and you know, I in this book I interview, I came across this unbelievable historian as a young guy in Chicago, and he has researched all of it. He's a Bears fan. He got really upset when they drafted Trubisky instead of Mahomes, as he should. And he said, all right, I think my team were racist at quarterback. So I'm going to put some numbers to it. You know, and he investigated all of it and how long it had taken for these teams to play. And you can really trace the arc when there's nothing and then a little bit and then there's more and then there's less and it goes up and then it goes down. And he said, you know, some of these teams that have only played white quarterbacks, you sort of understand. I mean, the New York Giants, you know, they've won a bunch of Super Bowls with the white quarterbacks. So the Green Bay Packers, for instance, have not played many black quarterbacks, but they've had some of the greatest greatest quarterbacks in history, a long line of them. So you can understand it a little, as his point was. The Bears, I'm not so sure. But, you know, but anyway, so some teams come at it differently. But so the Giants, you know, they've had success, but nonetheless, the record speaks for itself. And so it took until 2017.
John Eisenberg has a new book out on black quarterbacks. We will be discussing that. Listen, I will get back to the book. I want to get sort of onto the topicality of Oriole baseball for just one moment.
All right.
Because I got to get this in for you. You're a baseball guy. You wrote an incredible baseball book, an oral history of all sorts of quotes and notes. And I just bought my 1979 throwback Luis Aparicio. I know he didn't play on the 79 team. It just looks that way. That I'll be wearing at the Nest this week as we get ready for this. John, you've been here a long time, man. And you wrote the columns of, I mean, you're quoted in Peter Principles over and over again for all that Angelos has done. There's no lease, which... and there's very little accountability. There's very little being written about that or pressure on the governor or on the team. And it's all happy, happy, joy, joy. And that's where we're going to be for a couple of weeks here. This has been an incredible year, man. I mean, it's a year where like guys like you and I that don't have the press passes and go down there and work every day. This would have been a fun year to be around this group and watch this thing blossom. This is why you and I got into the business, right?
Absolutely. It's a great story. Someone else will write the book.
Correct. Will not be me. Correct.
It will not be me. But it's worthy. I'm honestly kind of stunned. I thought for a while, it appeared to me, you go back 2 or 3 years, 4 years. Yeah, they've drafted some pretty good players. It looks like they know what they're doing. They seem to be doing okay. To see it just take off. I mean, I thought this would maybe happen in 2024 or 2025. To just go on a road trip and win all the games, you know, practically. It's like, wow. I mean, night after night, I just go, wow, this team, they're good. And it's like, this is really something. It's not a fluke when you're at 90 wins in early September. So I don't know what'll happen in October. It's house money as far as I'm concerned. And it's been really, really fun to watch. I am watching. And what's really good, I mean, the Oriole fans, I'm not talking about ownership side. That's a whole nother story. But the baseball side, they look pretty smart. They're doing a lot of stuff. They not only have drafted well, their player development is good. They take retreads from other places, find what they do well, and accentuate that. I'm talking about some of these relief pitchers. I'm talking about Ryan O'Hearn. I mean, you're seeing it in a lot of ways. And it's like, that's pretty good. You know, tip of the cap. The Orioles, I think, have gotten smart. And so, you know, hats off to them.
Aaron Hicks, even. Means coming back, like the whole thing, they go and get the relief pitcher they gave away last year. And so, like, all of these things feel like they conspire. And if I were, and I will write the column on this 2-3 weeks from now because it's over the hill. I'm going to write to Adam Jones this week. I'm writing to Eric DaCosta, and all of it inspired by you. And you know this for real, inspired by you and Jack Gibbons. I write for both of you, quite frankly. If Connolly reads it, that's fine. But I mean, I write for you guys because you're my guys. For me, if I'm writing about this team, once they get through the weekend with Tampa and don't get swept and get swept up into fighting to win the division, right? If they can coast into this and win with 5, 6, 8 days left in the season, know that they're going to be a bye team, right? I mean, and then utilizing that bye with all of their science and all of their Sigma Del dealing cards and whatever they're going to do, that they come out into this thing, that they skip the 3-game series, because that's let everybody else go. Let Tampa might be out of the tournament by Friday,
yeah,
right? So getting the bye is ginormous for them, and then capitalizing on it, because, John, I'm going to tell you right now, you and I have been at this. I've known you since 84, 85, 86. You're not going to be 40 games over 500, maybe ever again. You're not going to – the Yankees and the Red Sox aren't going to be turds together maybe ever again. They haven't been right. in this lifetime. Show me the year where they both stunk this bad.
Right.
And the years they've stunk have been the years the Orioles can win. 12, 14, 16, one of the reasons they were in the seat is, oh, Boston had its manager eating chicken, drinking beer out back, and they had a flare-up, and Epstein let – you know, like all the – bad things. I mean, right, the Yankees right now, right? Like, the Yankees being this awful has opened the door, and they don't play each other as much, so that also benefits the Orioles, that they don't have to see power. Years when they are good, they won't have to see them as much. So all of this conspires, but I would be hard-pressed, and I'll meet you again a year from this week and the next year, because I've been meeting you all these years, that we're going to sit here the next 5 years, and they're going to be in any sort of a catbird's position the way they are right now. And to your point, at some point, the baseball people are going to walk down the hallway to the creeps that own the team and say, gimme, 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 write a check. And John Boy's already screaming he didn't have checks to write. So, you know, when it comes to signing these players, that I you know, I'm from Missouri until I see that, John.
Right,
but,
right.
But for me.
Scared to death of that point of this.
And Tommy Conwell's coming. There ain't no tomorrow. There's just right now. And I can't – if they take a facer and go out in 5 games in the first – PU and just to say, well, they'll be back. I don't know. No, I don't know. You get buys. I don't know. You're going to find yourself in a position to win 102, 3, 4 games.
Could be.
Ever again.
You know, very easy to concoct that. Certainly the period of time, the beauty of this right now is ownership is not involved. It's just not involved. It's just right
it's
now.
It's like Major League when they're ripping the pieces off the skirt.
Yeah, we're just playing baseball right now. It's just baseball. And, you know, it will be, and that will not be the case for long. So when you got these good players – you know,
Moneyball.
It ends very quickly, so that's what's tough. So you know, I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, it's the time is now, and they won't have a better shot. The Yankees are going to go buy everybody. The off season in Boston looks like Boston's got some players. It won't be that long. It will definitely be more competitive. It's a great opportunity this year. So it will be. I skipping that first round is a huge thing. And having your pitching lined up when the other teams is not. So it will be, I think winning the division would be a huge thing, and go for it. Who knows? You know, we got a bunch of kids. They're just figuring this out. Let them play, you know, let them play and see what happens.
You came here from Dallas, Texas, 4 decades ago, fell into this Oriole Earl Weaver thing back in the day. By the way, my guy John Miller, a different John Miller, writing this book on Earl Weaver, and I've been chasing him around, having him on as well, about the life and times of Earl. But you came into this where the Orioles had Ripken, Murray, bad things were about to happen in the you know, Lee Lacy, Don Ossie, Weaver in, Weaver out, Altabelli, you know, 0-21, like all the things you wrote about 3 decades ago with the Orioles. Where does this end? I mean, you love stories, and this story for me with the Peter Principles, John, I wrote Peter Principles after I wrote Purple Rain 2, and then my wife got cancer. I literally was 11 chapters into writing this book on Peter. My wife got cancer. I put the book down. And I never released it, but I've released it online now as to all – it was up to 2006. I was pretty much up to they're getting a television network and this Nationals thing's going to happen and they're going to roll in the money. All the TV money's going to come in and they're going to – and we're going to build something here. And, like, that's where I was in the story when it stopped. And I swear to you, in 12, when my, you know, when all this happened, my wife gets sick in 14 and then again in 15. And I thought, this is going to end with a parade for Peter. The Peter Principles is going to end somehow through all of this ish and awfulness, that somehow the Buck's going to will them to be pile divers. And that's where I thought it was a decade ago, that was the end of the story. I've never picked the book up. I've written a little bit about the mass and money and where it all went. And now it's all been pissed away 17, 18 years later. It's gone. It's over. They can't figure out how to pay the Nationals. It's It's ugly. The law firm's over. Asbestos is over. Dad's not over, but his work is over. His deeds are over. There's no lease. There's nobody to talk to. The governor and the commissioner are sort of sitting around saying, what? John's thinking he's going to win the World Series and create more value. I don't know where the end of this is. I mean, have you thought that out a little bit as far as, and especially, I hit Tom Lavera right before you came on, our mutual friend, Tommy Love. He wrote about how Sunday was so special because Snyder was gone.
Yeah.
And that inspired me to talk to you about it and want to talk to him about it, because there is going to come a day, and I hope I live long enough, that Steve Bisciotti won't own the Ravens and Peter Angelos and the Angelos family won't own the Orioles, that they'll both still be here and hopefully under lease and wearing orange and black and purple. But there's going to be a next thing. We haven't seen that here. Other than us fighting for the team and Modell to Bisciotti, most people 55 years old have no, they don't know who the hell Eli Jacobs was, let alone EBW or Hofberger. You know what I mean? Like, the next thing here for baseball is the most important thing. And I think the commissioner understands that. The people in baseball understand how screwed up this has been and how good it could be.
Yeah, I think people, I think the next step definitely involves, the team is set up nicely. The next step is sorting all this out. I've always been, I mean, obviously, I don't think Major League Baseball, I mean, I am not a boy who cried wolf. I don't think they're leaving. The least thing is upsetting the fact that it's not signed. Not good. I don't like it. I don't like whatever is happening. I don't think the Orioles are leaving Baltimore. I just don't buy that. I never have. And Major League Baseball is not going to let that happen. They're not going to leave this ballpark here, the history here. I just don't think it's going to happen. But yet, Major League Baseball.
But how screwed, how low is it going to, the floor going to fall? And we've seen it. I mean, it's been a disgrace, John. I mean, like, literally, there's nobody who could have bought this team in August of 93 that could have screwed it up as bad as it's been screwed up and profited more off it as well, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where the money is, but I guess they profited. Yeah. I mean, but they, you know, now the situation, I think in the long run, I mean, who knows? I'm grasping at straws, but I think in the long run, it'll probably get sold. I think Angelos's wife wants to sell the team. I'm just reading the newspaper like everybody else. She wants to sell. And, you know, I don't know the family dynamic. I don't know the fine language in the will. I don't know.
You didn't read the lawsuit?
Yeah. The lawsuit, you know, that was.
Read that.
And the coverage of it, and it was really interesting. But I think in the long run, it's a sale probably, but I don't know that. But it just seems to me eventually where we might be headed. Just my guess entirely.
October is going to give people a taste of how good it could be, right?
Yeah.
People say to me, free the birds, and I get pissed on about all that. I'm like, I did free the birds after they didn't pay me. They screwed people. They lied every day. They gave me a press pass and came in there and intimidated people. And like all the things you and certainly Ken Rosenthal and Mike Litwin before, like all of you dealt with that. John Buren dealt with that. I've had him on talking about how awful all of it was. And I did free the birds. And the real reason I did free the birds, dude, you've known me since I was 15 years old and was wearing the moon jersey in Sandy McKee's corner, you know, down at 501 North Calvert. I lived downtown at that point. I'd lived there 4 years, and I'm like, this is effed up. And am I the only one willing to say this isn't good and that this needs to change and that this is not sustainable 17 years later, that it's been driven into the ground? And that was back in 06. And the whole point was, this could be great. This should be great.
Yeah.
With a little love, this is a community asset. It's a beautiful thing to have the stadium sold out this Friday and Adam Jones and like all that. Like, that's what was missing. And that's why I did Free the Birds to begin with. So I still feel pretty healthy. And even though Bisciotti threw me out and Harbaugh's lie, they're all lying. That's great. I still feel like I might be young enough to be on the other end of this, because I've seen the Commanders fans live through it this week to say, hey, there will be another day. There'll be another. I said to my wife, one day I might go down there and have a prayer. We might be treated well. My name might be Aparicio again. I might feel good about going to the ballpark and putting on that orange jersey I bought this week, because I feel like I'm giddy. I'm feeling like this is coming back and people are coming back. And maybe it's their time. Maybe the next 10 years is the baseball team's time. I can cross my fingers and hope.
It could be. It absolutely could be. I mean, they are set up to have a pretty good team here. I mean, you're right, and who knows what any year brings in baseball. And, you know, last year you got a wild card team with 87 wins gets in the World Series. I mean, it's pretty fickle, and you don't know what's going to happen in the playoffs. But I'm seeing some infrastructure in the Orioles that looks pretty strong, and a very deep farm system. These guys, they got people around here. I've kind of followed it a little bit, you know, that no one's ever even heard of. They're coming. They are coming. They're like guys lined up at Newark Airport flying in one after the other. So it's going to be pretty good, I think, for a little while. Certainly interesting. And it would be nice to have, you know, the different top level, you know, what the Washington football fans just experienced. It is a liberating moment. You know, good for them is what I say.
Cathartic is what I would say. Hold that book up. Tell everybody about the book and where they can get it, John.
The book is called, it is just out this week. It's called Rocket Men, The Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football. It's my latest book, 11th book, 3 years in the making. It's available everywhere. Amazon, it's at all the local bookstores. I'm setting up a couple of local signings. Don't quite have them set up yet. I'm afraid to go with that, but I'll put it out on social media. And anyway, thanks for having me on to talk about it. And I'm going to get one in your hands.
We talked about every black quarterback except Lamar, ours. We haven't talked anything current. I got to let you go because I'm up against the clock with you, and I always come back and talk some Lamar. Come back, talk some baseball playoffs in a couple weeks.
I will.
Promote the book. I'm going to try to find Warren Moon and get him on to promote your book a little bit more. I had Pastorini last week, right? So if I had Pastorini last week, I can have Moon at some point here, and it gives me a chance to go through my old laundry, as Seinfeld would say. Because, you know, I mean, I haven't worn this one in 30 years, so it's my Warren Moon. It's the rotor. And it's like, it's got all that old 1989 mesh in it right now. So it's perfect. John Eisenberg's got a book. He's still here in Baltimore. So if you're walking around Taos and you're like, hey, that guy looks like John Eisenberg, it probably is John Eisenberg. And he might even be at the ballpark here having a beer with me down at the Nest at some point. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week. We're going to be at Fadley's on Friday in the morning with Dr. Anthony Jenkins from Coppin State University. They've been our partner for a long, long time. Larry Stewart. Once was a player with the Bullets and with Fang. He's now
covered
the head coach.
Him.
There
covered
you go.
Him.
Of course you did, John Eisenberg. Friday, we're going to be having a crab cake with those guys with Stu. Leonard Raskin's coming down. It's going to be a big hootenanny on Friday morning. And then Friday afternoon, we are at the Nest, which is underneath the cupcake and the fireworks on the top side, looking at the Oriole Park at Camden Yards side from the convention center. Just join it. Meet me at the convention center on the back end of the convention center on Friday. They named it after me. They called it the Nest. I don't think they really named it after me, but I'm just saying that at this point. Cheap beer, good hot dogs, great music, and a beautiful view of a sunset and hopefully the continuation of first place Orioles. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.